Hello, everyone, and welcome back into the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We are on an emergency alert. A podcast had to be put together in short order, as I am Mike alongside Chris. We've got Ryan alongside us as well for a podcast to announce all of the news. Actually, I guess it's been announced already, but we'll talk about all the news with the addition of J.J. Abrams returning to the Star Wars universe. We get him for episode 9. We want to talk about everything that means, what new things we can expect from the third installment of this new trilogy, but we also have to look back on the news from last week, as we didn't do a podcast when it was announced that Colin Trevorrow would be out as the director of episode 9. So there's a lot to get into in this show. All of the news that's been happening around Star Wars. We'll start it off. We'll go around to you two guys and just, what was your reaction when you heard that Colin Trevorrow was gone? And then we can talk about JJ after that. Chris, go ahead.
All right. Well, hey, sound the Death Star noise. all hands on deck. It was when I heard that Colin Trevorrow was gone.
Trevor.
I immediately thought that it was going to be like, oh, Rian Johnson's taking over. I thought it was going to be one swift move. Yep. Like, if you're going to do that kind of press release, do it all at once. I've always been kind of, I've never been like a hater on Trevorrow. Like, I did not mind Jurassic World. I liked the first movie, Safety Not Guaranteed. I was skeptical after hearing about his latest movie. But I was still interested because I knew the team around him was good. But does it surprise me after that last movie? It did not surprise me as much. The writing was kind of on the wall. I was genuinely surprised they did not have somebody picked already, though.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard about Colin Trevorrow getting the boot, I ran to anyone I could to say I told you so, because I've been telling anyone who will listen that he was definitely going to get fired for a long, long time. I think that he's like a functional director. I think he's fine. I think Jurassic World is a functional movie. I wasn't crazy about Safety Not Guaranteed. But I was not surprised in any way, shape, or form, especially since Lucasfilm has made it clear in the past 18 months that they have no qualms about letting directors go. And they're very much not messing around with this franchise. It was not a shock at all. I was a little shocked that they announced it before episode 8 came out, because I feel like the months leading up to that, they'd probably want to keep those clear. But knowing that they had this announcement to make, and they already knew that too, it makes a lot more sense.
So, Ryan, you thought the writing was on the wall just based on what they had done in the previous two standalone films with the directors that they eliminated and got rid of. There was nothing that you felt like was an indication that they were going to take it away based on the performance of Book of Henry, because it didn't seem like Lucasfilm was really reacting to that movie.
Well, I think that their announcement of Colin Trevorrow directing episode 9 was a little premature.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of, it always kind of seemed like a placeholder.
Mm-hmm.
Like they Jurassic World came out, it made all of the money. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, he's directing episode 9. I think, Chris, you were saying this. They were kind of like in a press conference, like, boom, boom, boom. Look like what we have coming.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that was, maybe it was just to appease like a shareholder situation where they're just like, yeah, right. Like, we got to do this. We got to show shareholders. So everybody's all in throwing money at these things.
Yeah. And after those first few weekends, Jurassic World, the adoration kind of dried up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it kind of became less of a like, quote unquote, like beloved movie as it was that Saturday that it came out, you know?
Right.
I don't know if I was in that camp.
I feel like everybody that enjoyed it was like, this is great. And then they were like, he's going to do the next Star Wars. And everybody's like, what?
Well, it wasn't great like that.
Yeah, right. Well, wait a second.
Hang on a minute. I felt when I saw Jurassic World, I was actually on the Trevorrow bandwagon after Safety Not Guaranteed. I was a big fan of that film, and I felt, oh, I'm so excited to see what he did with Jurassic World. And after watching that movie, I thought, no, keep him away from any franchise that I love. I don't want him part of it. And so,
do you feel like Safety Not Guaranteed, in hindsight, now knowing more of his work, is like less good?
I think I have to revisit it to see that, because I go off of my initial reaction when I saw it for the first time, didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of charmed by some of the characters. I had fun with it. I didn't think too much about it. And I just walked away. Hey, that was fun. I didn't expect that he would be a blockbuster filmmaker after that movie. I was really surprised that launched him into doing something like Jurassic World. So if I went back, I'd probably have a different perspective on it entirely. But sure. I was very surprised with the hire. I don't know if I felt the same way that it was a placeholder because I was just so worried. I just thought if they're going to go forward with this, I don't know what to expect. Ryan Johnson, on the other hand, I was thrilled. Well, and Chris, go ahead.
I was going to say, I always saw it kind of as a director match, though, as far as the original trilogy goes. I think you take Lucas for JJ. You know
Ryan
what I mean? Like
for Kirshner.
Kirshner, and then Marquard, right?
Yeah. Peter Marquard. Richard Marquand.
Richard Marquard. Yeah. And so, and which it's like largely rumored that Lucas was directing Return of the Jedi pretty much anyhow. Like he was just like Marquard was just like calling the scenes, but Lucas was just there. So I know that JJ is an executive producer on all three of these. Is that correct? So yes. I feel like he is probably still very involved in the creation of these stories.
Well, and so,
to an extent, yeah. I think that's what they're looking for. Although I don't know that Lucasfilm has behaved that way, because I think that they're trying to have their cake and eat it too by hiring directors that people are very excited about, like Ryan Johnson, that like Lord and Miller, that kind of have these like these distinct voices. But I think when push comes to shove, they don't really want to deal with like the kind of personality and kind of like artistic disputes that come with that.
Right. It's a pretty no nonsense gig. That's probably at most of Disney. The pointing example being Edgar Wright on Ant-Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very different with Marvel kind of calling the shots there. I don't know how involved Disney was with making the decision or with Lucasfilm, because Kathleen Kennedy certainly seems to be running the ship completely. I don't know if I mean, you heard the information about the script problems. That was what was put out there. But you talk about the directors kind of having this full autonomy over their film set and the creation of their films when they're doing it at a smaller level or doing it in a film like, say, the Lego Movie or 21 Jump Street, where no one is expecting anything from it. And then they go into this environment where things are a lot more structured. They have to stay to the script, or at least what we've read from a bunch of different reports, and it doesn't seem to work for them. And, you know, you can't criticize them too greatly, but this is the system you have to work in. And it almost goes back to an old style Hollywood studio system where you get a director who just executes the vision that's already there by the studio.
Right.
And if you have these young guys who want to do their own thing, or at least newer filmmakers, it doesn't seem to vibe. And I don't really fault either side in this, to be honest. I think you could criticize Lucasfilm for jumping off of a couple of directors and firing them and not really being clear from the get-go that they wanted people who were going to follow what they wanted. But I think that, you know, both sides at least could be justified in having problems.
And truth be told, I mean, if this was anything but Star Wars, I would never say this, but like part of me, knowing that Lucasfilm, for the sake of like, I don't want to call it the product, but for the sake of like keeping the vision of Star Wars as an entity clear and like streamlined, the fact that they're willing to fire directors and risk that PR is actually a little bit of a comfort to me.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. It's almost like Star Wars chooses the directors. The directors don't get to work
The fact that Kathleen Kennedy will be like, you're not doing the Star Wars that Lucasfilm wants you to do.
Right.
And therefore, like, you're not doing Star Wars anymore. Right. Granted, I'm not, like, thrilled with some of their... Like, I'm not thrilled about Ron Howard directing the Han Solo movie.
Yeah.
But, it makes sense. Like, he is, like, functional, like, as directors get.
Right.
Like, there's almost no voice to his films, but he, like, makes solid movies.
Yeah, he gets all the pieces together really well.
But yeah, and he makes what is technically a movie.
How limiting is this, though, going forward? Do you think that after we get out of this trilogy, where there has been the turmoil, has been the chaos in all these new directors, do you think that as we move on to episode 10, because you know they're not going to stop after episode 9, mm-hmm. they're still going to have a Skywalker saga that goes on forever, do you think they'll open it up again because things have been more established, or will they keep it this way? And if it is limited, do we lose out on what could be some truly new aspect of Star Wars, which I think is a conversation we've had on the podcast before?
Right.
I think that the more Star Wars movies that exist, the more willing they'll be to take actual risks. But yeah, I think that at this point, the stakes are so high. You know, it's like right now we're dealing with the offshoot movies, but like this is a saga movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of which I understand that there are 9 of them, which is more than like any film franchise, but like
right.
This is the third in a trilogy that we're dealing right now. They don't really have the opportunity to have like, you know, an off one.
Right. Yeah. They have to end this on the ultimate note. And maybe Star Wars will go through some kind of weird, like James Bond type phase of things where there's like the goofy series or like the more goofy ones. And then they go back to the darker stuff. Like, I would be very interested to see when they start like letting those reins up a little bit. But mm-hmm. honestly, I think with Star Wars, I mean, I think lessons learned from the prequels and then all of that kind of like media that followed the parodies and all that stuff. I think fans ultimately did not like that stuff because it just kind mm-hmm. of started to dilute things. So I really hope that the people in charge of Star Wars, or if Star Wars is in charge of itself, the Force, I hope that they keep this quality standard. And yeah, they're not afraid to fire the biggest directors that are going right now.
I will also say that it's a testament to Kathleen Kennedy and like her history and like body of work that very rarely, I mean, people will be like, oh man, they like fired another director, but like people don't speak about it. Or at least I've heard, like, oh, Lucasfilm has no idea what they're doing. The way that people may talk about, like, how WB is handling the DC universe, where it's like, what is going on over there? No one's leading the ship. It's like, with Lucasfilm, I personally trust Kathleen Kennedy's, like, judgment on these mm-hmm. things more than any of the directors that they've hired for, like, a Star Wars movie.
Which, as you said, she's earned. She's earned over the years with all of her different projects. I don't think there's any point. I mean, we may have little nitpicks here about some of the decisions she's made, but she's absolutely earned it. But you talked about some of the stakes from a business standpoint for Disney. Mm. You think about this original trilogy. You have to nail it because you're opening a theme park in 2 different locations in 2019.
Right.
And if the third one is terrible, you may see some of the ticket prices or admissions drop. I mean, think about the change now, because the other bit of news that we haven't mentioned yet is that Episode 9 is moving from May of 2019 to December of 2019. Mm-hmm. So even just in the opening, I mean, the opening was going to be big no matter what, even if the films didn't work out, Star Wars Land was going to be a huge deal. But now the franchise is not finished before the theme park opens, like it seemed like it was going to with the film being pushed back. So you want to continue to drive interest. You want the thrill to be there. You want the excitement to keep people coming back to the park. So if you don't finish off the first trilogy on a high note, it could impact you for the foreseeable future before you get the next trilogy off the ground.
Right.
Yeah. And you also have to think about like a game of averages, right? Like it's like, in terms of Star Wars fandom, although obviously I don't ascribe to this, the original trilogy is considered, you know, the trilogy. And then you have the prequel trilogy, which many people consider a big disappointment. And it's like, if you have 2 trilogies sandwiching a good, what's considered the trilogy, that are like both disappointing, like you're not playing the odds well.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Not that like people will like, you know, turn off of Star Wars or anything, but it's like you have to keep your average up.
Yeah. I mean, the better they can do now is the better they can do in the future. So it is interesting to see that, like these movies, you kind of think of them as like unstoppable forces, but they could actually, they are at risk like any other movie of being not well received, right?
Especially if you reach saturation point.
Yeah.
Ryan, what is that batting average, though, that is necessary? Is it, you know, hitting 345? Do they hit 500? Half the films have to be great. What do they need to be at to sustain the level of interest?
Now sports are involved. My analogy has exceeded my knowledge. Well, I just think that they
let me ask, is a runner on third? Do you have a runner on third and the positions have shifted? You've got the infield off to the right. No, I'm kidding.
All I'm saying is that JJ's got a really... swing cleanup. Am I right?
Close enough.
Hey, we got it. We got there.
All right, so let's go back to talking a little bit more about JJ. Obviously, right. We've gone in depth about our thoughts on The Force Awakens. My first reaction to hearing that JJ was coming back for episode 9 was a bit of disappointment that it wasn't Rian Johnson, but I saw a couple of points online that people made, which is, why is everyone clamoring for another Rian Johnson Star Wars film when we haven't seen the first Rian Johnson Star Wars film? And I thought that was a great point, because as much as I like him as a director, I don't know how The Last Jedi is going to turn out. All indications are that Lucasfilm's very happy and this should be a great movie, but I was excited about the idea of Johnson continuing. But once I got past that, I went back and I revisited the movies with Mikey, Chris, that you and I have talked about before, that's about The Force Awakens, which really dives into everything that JJ accomplished in a movie that no one thought that he could hit out of the park, to go back to another reference to baseball. I think he did so many things so well in it that the criticisms that come out... Yeah, the criticisms that come out of, and actually I think I'm stealing that directly from Movies with Mikey. He did talk about all the home runs that J.J. Abrams hit in this movie. But the criticisms were really nitpicking, because so much was great about The Force Awakens that why should we in any way be disappointed that J.J. Abrams is coming back? It seems very fitting that he would cap off the trilogy he started.
Yeah, especially considering everything we just said, he's kind of like the perfect choice that way. He's like tried and true. He clearly will play ball, because they had like what appeared publicly like a great relationship with JJ. But he also I was speaking to a friend about this recently. JJ is who I love as a filmmaker, but he's a very functional director that has these moments of like visual spectacle that are like very Spielberg-esque. So like a big example of that would be the Millennium Falcon flipping over, them killing the engine, the Millennium Falcon flipping over so they could shoot the TIE fighter in the Force Awakens. There's a lot of things that are just like, it makes the whole audience hold their breath while the rest of the movie is just, you know, he knows how to pace a movie. He knows how to, like, I don't think he does anything that's like incredible, but I think that he really like nails it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they need.
Yeah. And just imagine now him having the experience, like there's a whole level of things he doesn't need to like figure out. So now he can focus all of that energy on making it that much more better. Right. Like he doesn't have to figure out these like Star Wars world details. Like he did that already. And it's pretty cool, too, because like this was his he essentially made this new universe. Right. This was kind of his.
Yep.
Creation. So for him to finish this up, I'm sure he had to have ideas how this was going to end. Like, right?
You would hope so, despite them saying there was not much to really go on after the end of episode 7. I want to go back to what you said, Rian, though, about kind of like the moments of visual brilliance or even the set pieces and the action that are so brilliant. He also has, I think, well, one thing that's not actually seen in terms of actual plot to the film, but he casts so well. And he casts this new trilogy his casting directors are phenomenal, but he works with them. And I think we have to credit so much of that in finding Rey. Finn was obviously, John Boyega was already somebody that people knew from Attack the Block, but he got him in there. But in the film, I think he has moments of emotional brilliance that connect you to a character so quickly in a movie that despite some issues that you might find with overall story structure, his individual character scenes can be phenomenal. And I think... Right. The first instance that comes to mind to me is the moment that Poe is put down in front of Kylo and he makes the joke about who talks first. In that moment, we know who this character is and we already empathize.
In that moment
in
the theater, didn't you like breathe a sigh of relief?
Yeah.
Yes.
The second that happened, I was like, I know exactly. Like he knows exactly.
Oh my gosh. And the same thing just a little further with Rey's introduction. Like you immediately get a sense of her just through those like four different shots.
And he's done that, though, throughout his career. I think back to the first Star Trek movie that he did, and whatever your opinion on that movie is, it doesn't matter. In that first scene Kirk's father is killed and his mother is being taken away on that ship, I felt, like, emotionally invested, and I was only 5 minutes into the movie.
Yep. You know it's a J.J. Abrams movie when they slowly duck out the sound effects, and then you hear those violins coming up.
Oh, my God. And it kills. It kills. Right?
Every time. It's a recipe.
Michael also, Giacchino. Just speaking
a little bit about what we were talking about with like PR and stuff, which is that people are trusting in Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy as they should. However, I was thinking about this today. Obviously, there is a lot of I was hoping, you know, like everybody else, like maybe they'll hire like a cool like like up and coming director, and that would be very exciting. And like, hopefully in the future that will be the case. You know, I think that like Star Wars movies still have room for that, and that like that's what like the direction that Hollywood should go. I think that with JJ, considering everything that's happening with Lucasfilm, and it's happened in the last 18 months, it makes sense from a business and PR standpoint for them to go with JJ, if not only because they don't want to have to fire another director. Right. And like, but seriously, like they know that if they hire JJ, like JJ is going to make this movie. And like, I might eat my words, but I'd be very surprised if JJ fired from this movie.
I think the same thing with your Ron Howard point. It's like you're paying for stability. Like you're getting, you are getting something that is tried and true. You know that they work. You know they can make this movie. They're going to play by the rules. You can guarantee that JJ is, I mean, he probably has obviously a little power, but he's probably, there's also like now an expectation like, oh, I know what I can or cannot do.
Yeah. And I think that like Lucasfilm, like, you know, once they, if they get rid of, if they drop three directors in a row, like that's starting to look like no one knows what's going on. So I can understand that they'd be like, this is our safest bet from a business and PR standpoint, for better or worse. I mean, that says a lot about the movie industry. That's very unfortunate, but the internal logic at Lucasfilm would make sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but it's at the sacrifice of diversity, I would say. Like obviously that's, I guess, how Hollywood works a little bit, but it would have been exciting to see a new director, a new face in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, again, hopefully like Star Wars will continue to like, you know, like the Star Wars world and Lucasfilm will continue to value diversity, hopefully, as they have in their casting.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, it would have been great if it was on this movie, and hopefully on future movies, they will do that.
We've seen it in front of the camera. We just haven't seen it behind the camera.
Exactly.
Yet.
Yeah, and I think that to your point, Mike. Also, with like the casting ability of these, like I mean, a cast of that kind of diversity level is like, you don't see that in a movie this scope. So it is interesting they don't do it behind the camera as well.
Which is one of the things that maybe JJ doesn't get the credit he deserves for it, is for doing something in a blockbuster franchise that should have been a long time coming. It shouldn't have been a tough thing to do. And yet he did it and he brought it in. And that's not even what people are talking about anymore about this film, because it just fits so perfectly that you have a diverse cast, that you have a female lead, and that you have an African-American lead as well. I mean, it all works because JJ made it work with a great cast, and you people move on and talk about other stuff and nitpick about story items in it, which I'm probably going to do here in the next 10 minutes. But I do want to say one last thing before we leave Rian Johnson. I was excited about the idea of him. Obviously, we don't know what The Last Jedi is going to be, but let me ask, based on the work you've seen from him in his prior films, do you think that Rian Johnson is a better combination writer-director than J.J. Abrams?
I think Rian Johnson is better at writing Rian Johnson movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Well, we've only really seen Rian Johnson movies. He's not had to work under any other umbrella.
Yeah, I think that despite the IMDb profile that I'm sure we will go through of JJ's, I think that JJ actually is like, he's not always categorized as a writer, but I think that he's a very strong one.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that he's only written and directed three films. Now, he's written and directed a lot of television shows, and obviously with Felicity and a couple episodes of Lost, but he has written and directed The Force Awakens, Super 8, and Mission Impossible 3. Those are the three films that he's done both jobs. But as you said, it's weird that he doesn't get a writing credit on Star Trek or Star Trek Into Darkness, because you know he had such a big impact on where those stories were.
Right.
Also, think about those movies and how rarely a movie like Super 8 or Star Wars The Force Awakens or MI3 would be written and directed by.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's often not the case.
Right. It is some kind of, he is like from some kind of new class of filmmakers that like almost taking some of the indie stuff, but also like the old Hollywood kind of thing, the blockbuster, it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I mean, this just starts to confirm him more as like the new Spielberg, right?
Yeah. Well,
I just hope he doesn't retire after this.
But going back to the point, I'm curious just because my own perception of watching his movies is that something always feels a little bit off in terms of how satisfying the story is in the end, and obviously that's a big part of who he is in the mystery box, which, you know, he's done a TED talk about and is a big part of who he is as a writer and a director. Do you feel like there's been areas that have been lacking in terms of a satisfying, coherent final story in the films that he's made?
I do not.
Okay.
I think in the TV shows he's created, perhaps. The films I've all thoroughly enjoyed.
What about Star Trek Into Darkness? Even though it seemed like the mystery that wasn't exactly a mystery about the character of Khan was trumped up as almost bigger than the actual story of that film.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think they were reaching for something there. I still think that's a solid movie, and it you know what? It was a new take on something. So
yeah, movie really gets, I feel like that gets like an undue beating.
That's fair. I mean, I look back on it and I think that I just felt like so much time was spent on that. And maybe because I'm still focused on constantly being told that, oh, yeah, the character of Benedict Cumberbatch is not Khan. And then when that's the case. Stinley. What?
Constantly being told? Nailed it.
Ooh.
That's from a droid heads.
Hey, you're batting 300. You're batting 300.
So I think that there can be some areas where you can nitpick in The Force Awakens, though to me, it's not something that bothers me when I watch the movie. I just feel like, I don't know if you've read the same things that I have, where there is a lot of criticism on the way the story doesn't quite mesh.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is going to be feedback that the studio has, and hopefully these are the kind of things that will be like, this last movie should technically, by the end of the second movie, be written, right? Like, the pieces of what has to happen should be there. This is not a spoiler alert. I think the good guys win. So I think it's just going to be how they do it. Obviously, that's the plot of the movie. But I think there's going to be lessons that have been learned from The Force Awakens and probably the upcoming Last Jedi. That he's going to be able to say, like, all right, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And then these pieces are just going to fit into place perfectly. And he can just conduct the orchestra until we see the credits.
I do have this, like, strange sneaking suspicion, though, that, like, on the internet, en masse, the Star Wars community who adored The Force Awakens will just, like, on a dime, decide that they hate J.J. Abrams this week. You know, like, all of a sudden, everybody will be like, this is terrible. Like, why would they do this? When, like, what, 2 years ago, it was, like, the best thing that ever happened when The Force Awakens came out, which it just speaks to a short attention span. And again, I don't think that the, like, people that'll be complaining about, like, the nitpicking of the story are going to be the ones who are, like, upset that he was, like, a safe choice or, like, what this says, like, about Hollywood on a bigger level. I think it'll just be more like that they'll be complaining that he's going to remake Return of the Jedi the way they felt like he remade New Hope, which I think is insane.
Right.
Because assumedly The Last Jedi will send us in a different direction, that it wouldn't go right into the Return of the Jedi.
Right.
I need to say real quick, Sam, who was on last time, had some thoughts about this. I wanted to get those in there for him. He said when he left The Force Awakens, the first thing he said was, I wish JJ were directing all three. That's exciting for him. And that he loves Star Trek Into Darkness.
Ooh, loved there you it. Go.
And he's a diehard Trekkie. He used the term Trekkie. There was some controversy as to whether that was the right term or not.
Trekkie or is there a name for Star Wars fans?
People.
Humans.
I just want to get that.
Well, Sam, two out of three ain't bad.
I look forward to hearing Sam's full take on Star Trek Into Darkness, because I do want to get more into what he loves about it.
That'll be on our Star Wars Star Trek Into Darkness edition.
The Trek you're looking for.
But Ryan, you talked about there is concern, not necessarily that you would go into repeating Return of the Jedi, but do you take any concern from at least elements being so familiar of A New Hope in The Force Awakens, and there being more of the nostalgia factor than a new story with JJ coming back.
I do not, Mike.
Okay. I like, you know, we've got a really good flow with the just quick answers, because on a podcast, you really want as many one or two word answers as possible.
I think there's
like
two.
I said a lot.
I think there's two ways to approach that element. A, I like those things, so I'm happy to see them again.
I love Return of the Jedi. I've watched it a million times.
And B, the nostalgia thing. I mean, I think this movie definitely set up this whole nostalgia train, right? What we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years. Like, this was... everything now is set in the 80s as a child. I'm hoping that they use that to influence how things look. But I think in this one, and which is what I hope Rian Johnson is doing as well, is going to use that just to kind of influence that, the world itself, but then hopefully push beyond that so we see something like a new world for Star Wars, right?
Also, tell me that you don't want to see a couple of porgs smash an AT-ST with two logs.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
And then they have that one fried porg that gets shot by the laser beam.
Oh, my God. Chris, I have to tell you, I read a lot of fan mail for the podcast.
Oh, you do.
It's forwarded to my email.
You do.
Nicole from Queens was very upset about your porg steak comment.
It's a delicacy.
She found it very insensitive and disturbing. So.
It's just a snack that I enjoy.
Any new additions to any movie ever got as much play as the porgs have gotten before this movie's ever come out? I don't think that there's ever been anything quite like this.
No, I think the name is the best name ever to say.
I think it's hilarious that people are already torturing themselves over whether they love or hate them. Like,
this is where we're placing our anxiety. Like, before it was just like, will this movie be released? That was like The Force Awakens. And now it's like, these porgs, right? That's why I've taken the stance of eating them. I don't want to eat a porg in real life. I need to say it for the record. I'm not going to eat a porg.
All right. The last other bit of news that we have is regarding Episode 9 as well. One of the new writers, or at least the writer who is working with J.J. Abrams, is Chris Terrio, who's an Oscar winner for Best Adapted Screenplay from Argo. He is going to be adapting, because let's be honest, if you're taking a Star Wars story at this point, you are adapting a story, not just from George Lucas in the original trilogy, not from the previous film in The Force Awakens, but also from the Lucasfilm story group. So it's not essentially that he's coming up with his own story. There's a lot of people involved in this process. So he's done a great job as adapting a screenplay in the past. Now, one obviously disturbance in The Force, you have to say, is that he was a co-writer on Batman versus Superman, which would make anybody cringe, I would think.
I do think that I'd say the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, to bury it in the news, they will announce that Chris Terrio has been replaced with Lawrence Kasdan.
That's
why I was thinking that it would happen. Yeah.
I'm going to echo that thought. I think this must have been, so he just got signed on. Is this correct? He was never writing with Trevor.
He wasn't even really, I had to dig to find out about him, like, so that was the headline.
My guess is that maybe and I don't know how these deals work, but maybe he had the second option. If Trevorrow goes, he comes in, right? Is Kasdan said he's not going to do any more, though?
He said he's done after the Han Solo film, that he's he wrote with his son. Yeah, that's what
you know, else said they were done. Yeah, so that's that doesn't mean a lot to me. I mean, he wrote Argo, it was 2012, so it's around the time of the announcement. I'm sure he's on a short list. Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens there.
It might be like a Michael Arndt thing where his name's on the credits for the next 6 years.
Right. Is it only the 6 years? Or is that?
That was just an arbitrary.
I was going to say that'd be the most interesting deal ever.
Now I'm really self-conscious about it, though.
Do you think there's going to be a climactic moment where we find out that Kylo and Rey both had the same mother's name despite not actually having the same mother? Is that going to be how the movie ends in Episode 9?
I'm gonna go ahead and I'm not gonna pin that on Terrio.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's his fault.
It's just gonna be a coincidence, really.
I was gonna say that they're both, their mother could be Padme, but I'm like, no, that doesn't work in the timeline.
Wait a second.
If there's a bunch of scenes where like John Goodman and Alan Arkin dressed as old stormtroopers are
bickering
back and forth,
then... and then they make whatever the equivalent of a Star Wars movie is.
Well, I think a lot of the problems with Batman v Superman, I'm not sure I put that on Chris Terrio. It seemed like, if for better or worse, he was brought in as someone who wasn't very familiar with like any kind of source material and was like, I want to try to make this interesting.
Right. Yeah. The movie has like six writers or something. Or I guess those are just character credits. But David Goyer and Chris Terrio.
I'm pinning that on Goyer.
Well, it's also, and Snyder.
That movie also feels like it's like three different movies at once. The extended edition, I feel, cleans it up, but then you have to watch a 9-hour movie.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on over there at DC.
So he's also writing Justice League. This could be maybe this is a play for Disney to start picking off DC writers.
Is that really where you want to go, though? Wouldn't you want to just go and try to pick off the Marvel writers that are already part of your entire company?
I mean, like, to take them, bring them to Marvel.
Possibly. Get them out of the, I mean, if they see some sort of talent that we're not seeing on screen in the DC films, unless Terrio worked on Wonder Woman, which I don't believe he did.
There's also an element in Hollywood of like writers are generally like there's things like we don't know. Like, I feel like writers are usually better writers than like the movies that they get produced a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, there's so many hands in there. It can't exactly be their movie. It can't be the script that they had come up with.
Yeah, and it might be that, like, aside from Argo, Chris Terrio might have a script floating around Hollywood that's, like, blowing everybody's hair back. That they're like, we need to get this guy, you know, that right, we just don't know about.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, look, an Oscar-winning screenwriter is not a bad way to go for any film.
Yeah, you're not slumming it.
No. Not at all. Hey, do you know what movie Jeffrey Abrams wrote? I call him Jeffrey because that's what he's credited as.
Was it Witness?
No, so he was known for writing Regarding Henry, Harrison Ford. But after that...
A delightful movie.
But after that, he wrote this movie with Joe Pesci, Danny Glover, Rosanna Arquette. It's called Gone Fishing. Two fishing fanatics get in trouble when their fishing boat gets stolen while on a trip.
This sounds like a Finn and Poe comic book.
Yeah, exactly.
Story.
So like, if we see a lot of that in there, I'm wondering what that could mean.
Much like Han Solo's ship got stolen from him and Chewbacca while they were on a trip.
Exactly. Everything, I believe, is just a reference to Gone Fishing from this point out.
I believe it got stolen by Duquesne and then by Ankar Platt.
I want that story more than anything right now.
What about Conja Club? Where were they in all of this?
Yeah, I hope
they were
in Scotland,
I believe.
I hope we see them again. I really do.
Because they didn't use the actors from The Raid very well.
Oh, yeah. Wait, was Conja Club the Raid actors?
I'm thinking
of the other, like, bafflingly Scottish actors.
Yeah. I hope we see all the gangs again. And maybe that's what
Conja Club, apparently they had, like, a really cool cut scene where they were doing, like, some Raid stuff.
Oh.
Another opportunity for another standalone film that has nothing to do with our current timeline of the Skywalker saga. Any last reactions about the news before we get into one last item that has nothing to do with the current news?
I think it's a good thing, and I'm happy JJ is back. It feels good. And I also add a note, very happy about the Christmas, our holiday season release date. I think that's... there's something cozy about having a Star Wars movie to look forward at the end of the year.
You're not a purist and want it to go back to May?
Nah.
Chris will be wrapped in a blanket with hot cocoa until December 20th, 2019.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, last thing to talk about. Any Force Friday 2 purchases that are notable for either one of you?
Oh. Well, I eyed up that Millennium Falcon.
Oof.
Did not press commit on it.
How much was that again?
I think it's $800.
It's $800.
Yeah, I did not double down on anything this year.
I also did not. I think it was more that I didn't want to wander into spoiler territory too much.
Yeah.
That was at least the good comment from Ryan Johnson, as he said there weren't any spoilers to worry about from the toys.
I read
that Snoke Star Destroyer or whatever it's called, the like Ultra.
That's new, yes.
The, aggro yeah. Star Destroyer is like yeah. pretty incredible.
I read somewhere where people were putting a lot of the story together based on the packaging for these toys.
Oh, mm-hmm. the details in the packaging, like the different descriptions that were on the back.
Yeah, some of the images and stuff. Yeah. I heard that it's possible now to start piecing together a pretty close story. So I too am staying a little bit away from that.
The packaging never lasts long enough for me to read any of it. Come on.
Yeah, right.
I spent like half the day because the Mega Star Destroyer is said to be 60 kilometers long. And I spent like half the day trying to contextualize that in my mind. Like trying to be like, how fast does an X-Wing go? So like, how long would it take for it to fly end to end? Like that kind of thing.
Can you get back to us with the exact math so we do know that? For
yeah, guys, I'll crunch some numbers. I'm going to call some people. No,
do
I'll
a
get
math,
back to you.
Math of Star Wars podcast.
I did make one purchase, which was the Sphereo R2-D2, which I currently
love.
Oh,
you know what? I got to get that.
I mean,
Amazon?
It is. I have the BB-8. And I enjoyed the BB-8. It was great. But I just love the R2-D2. All the sounds actually come from R2. Yep. The fact that he can roam around and make sounds from the movie. And then my favorite part is that early in A New Hope, when he's shot by the Jawas and he makes that noise and falls over, you can hit a button and he does exactly that. They have it fall over. It's hilarious and amazing. And
phenomenal.
I love it. And I'm sure I'm not going to play with it after the first week. But I think it's awesome.
That sounds like a good friend, though, for those lonely nights. You know?
When you're curled up on the couch waiting for episode 9?
That's right. That's it. I will order 10 of them.
Chris is going to be wrapped up in them like puppies.
You just R2s and Porgs all over. You have one of my favorite items, Mike, and it's that your R2-D2, your other R2-D2, the Sideshow, which is really cool as well.
The 1/6 scale, I did the R2-D2 and the C-3PO, and I stare at them through this entire podcast. I have up to their expectations while we do
They're doing the legendary scale now. It's a 2 feet tall R2-D2.
Yeah, and I if I had the money, maybe I would buy that. But down the road is a full-size functioning R2 in my future.
You guys got to get Audible. And it's a mattress to sponsor the pod.
I know. We got to get some. Hey, if anyone wants to sponsor our podcast, we're looking for sponsors.
Presenting sponsor of the Droids You're Looking for a Star Wars podcast is
Bonobos.
Blue Apron.
Yeah. Hey, if you're listening.
A lot of free buzz for
them.
I don't think
it's a good idea if you have to finance your R2-D2 statue. Like, that's the default option here.
Yeah, maybe we should just start a Kickstarter.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that idea.
Hit me R2.
I did. That's the other thing I did with Force Friday 2 is I did walk around with the Star Wars app and the Find the Force augmented reality, which I found interesting. I mean, it was cool.
That sounds like it wasn't that good.
No, I mean, that's where I'm kind of going with it. But I would say maybe if I were a little bit younger and also, you know, I wasn't going to ask a random person in the store to take a picture of me standing next to an augmented reality Chewbacca. I don't know why I was that shy, but I just didn't feel like I wanted to do that with a random stranger.
Right.
I did think it was odd that when you would walk up to one of the signs, the character that was on the sign would not be the one that would appear. So you'd walk up to a stormtrooper, and there's R2-D2. And I'm like, wait a second.
That was a little bit strange. It was smart, but not that smart.
Yeah, and maybe that was their intention to just have it be a random character every time you did it, but I felt like it was the same one each time I pulled it up. So that's going to pretty much do it for this edition. I will say, if you don't mind, as the listeners out there, the droids heads out there, out of you, if you could go to iTunes, review this podcast, let us know what you think. If you can give us a good rating, we would much appreciate it. It would help us get a little bit notice among the Star Wars podcast community. And maybe as we get the build up to The Last Jedi, we could possibly be featured in iTunes if we get enough reviews. So we would appreciate that. On Facebook, on Twitter, join us there as well. We will continue to be breaking all this news. There's been more news than I think I ever thought we'd have to cover when we started this podcast.
Yeah, I remember earlier in the year, we're kind of like, well, what are we going to talk about?
What are
and
we going to do?
Somehow, Star Wars finds a way.
Well, let's hope that the next announcement is in Episode 9 is last Star Wars movie.
Exactly.
Ryan. Thank you again for joining us. We'll probably have you on shortly. I'm sure Attack of the Clones will be talking to you once again. That is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For a Star Wars podcast. For Chris, I am Mike. We will catch you next time for another edition of the podcast.